Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Danielle Park, editor of the popular blog Juggling Dynamite and president of Venable Park Investment Council Incorporated. Her websites, jugglingdynamite.com and venablepark.com. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, thank you, Jim.
Housing affordability in Canada, are prices coming down and are people snapping them up if they are exhibiting lower prices?
So prices are coming down. I was just doing some actual comparisons to October prices, which just came out from the Canadian Real Estate Association, the sales numbers and the average sale price data, and comparing that to where we were at the peak of this housing cycle in February of 2022. And it's quite significant. The average sale price, so these are things, deals that actually closed in October, the average sale price was $656,000. That's down 20% almost from the $816,000, which was the peak in terms of average sale price in February of 2022. And that February 22 price, average price, was up about 50% over the prior 2 years. So that's how mad it was during the pandemic in Canada with ultra-low interest rates and all of the manias that were moving popular culture, you know, in terms of needing secondary properties and moving, you know, to remote work scenarios or having investments, so-called, or rental properties. You know, there was there's something like 1,600 Airbnb properties, for example, listed in Victoria. And we know Victoria is a lovely place, but Vancouver, as you know, brought in the change to use restrictions on use for those types of rentals. That's to be effective as of May. And so you're seeing a big surge in properties listed there, but also in many other places. So not only is, you know, so there's a lot of places bringing in restrictions around how much you can offer in these short-term rentals, and that greatly curtails the income, which is typically more elevated for periodic rental than it is for the long-term lease options that are that people can take on as tenants. So the fact is a lot of properties are getting listed now, a steady stream. And unfortunately, even though prices have been coming down, we see a lot of new price signs. I check this pretty much daily. I'm very, very interested because this is such an economically impactful sector, and particularly in Canada, because as I was, you know, pointing out for many years, our housing sector became the main engine of our entire economy during the preceding 10 years up to about 2022, where the bulk of our GDP growth was coming from the basically activity in the housing sector. We know it's the, you know, the main, it was a main employer, whether that be for finance, mortgage broking, construction, transactions, legal, you know, insurance. And then there's the knock-on effects, of course, to big-ticket items, whether it be appliances or furniture or, you know, all the services that go with that. So it's been a massive driver of economic activity. And the problem with that, of course, is there's only so much productivity gains can be made from, you know, it's great to get people all into stable shelter that they can afford, but once you are now just doubling the size of the shelter or tripling the size of the shelter such that it's much more expensive to maintain, then you're not getting any bang for that buck. That's just excess spending on a consumption basis that is not going to give any lasting benefit. So this has been the cost or the downside of this obsession with housing in Canada. So as we watch these trends now reverse, which is properties coming up for sale, prices coming down, you know, rents are now coming off the boil because there's more supply coming on the market, more people looking for tenants or moving to long-term leases of necessity because there's, you know, either restrictions on the short-term stuff or there's not enough travelers now because the consumer is under assault with the high carrying costs across the whole economy. So you've got this unraveling of the bubble that was, and we know, of course, that Canada had this really horrific overshoot in terms of prices relative to incomes from the year 2000 through 2022. The Canadian average home price, you know, averaged about a 17% increase annually for that 22-year period. But meanwhile, that's about 17%. About a 17% annual gain. But the average Canadian wage went up about 3%. So we've had this huge overshoot in the cost of shelter relative to incomes. And when you look at any kind of chart, whether it's, you know, just historically in Canada or Canada relative to other countries, you see that it's just this glaring bubble basically in the pricing, and that's now coming off and being corrected. And you know, a lot of people are now thinking, evidently from all the readings that I've done and the Reddit boards and everything that I follow and the agents, there's a good amount of people saying that they are going to wait till the spring now. So there's this sense that, you know, oh well, the market's not been good this fall, it's been weaker than normal or average, but we'll just put things back on in the spring, and by then everyone will be in the mood to buy real estate again. Well, interest rates are not likely to come off significantly between now and the spring in terms of mortgage rates. They may indeed come off somewhat because bonds, treasury bonds, have indeed been rallying the past 6 weeks, which brings down fixed mortgage rates eventually. So they have come off the boil, but that's not likely to bring them down significantly by the spring. And the Bank of Canada at this point is not expected to start cutting interest rates until potentially by May or June. And when they do, that's just the short end, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm afraid that there's going to be a lot more pressured people looking to offload pricing that properties they bought at the peak and wanting to lower their carrying costs across the board. And that's not going to be very supportive of price, which, you know, ultimately we need prices to be much cheaper. That's been the nasty secret that no one wanted to admit, that prices were unfortunately unsustainable. And as that mean reverts, of course, it has broad implications for the Canadian economy, which, by the way, I think is already in recession. I think historically, many of the factors that typically give us that warning have been all checked off here. And in retrospect, we may indeed find that Canadian recession started even perhaps before the U.S. recession, which at this point looks like it's likely in the first quarter or so of 24, if not already started. But basically, you know, the U.S. is our major trading partner, and as it starts to weaken, and it is, Canada follows suit. And in this case, as I said, I think we're more vulnerable because of the amount of household debt and because of the incredible bubbles and the precariousness of our economic dependence on that one sector.
Now, I know affordable housing in the past relied on foreclosed homes being on the market. Are they about to hit the market again?
Well, there is actually. I'm watching that too. There's a steady stream of foreclosures, properties being listed, certainly all around the GTA. You're seeing that every week, a few dozen are being listed by lenders. In some cases, you see that the owner's been trying to sell a property for a certain price, and then you see the lender now listing it typically for a lower price. You know, they're sort of trying to get more realistic in getting their actual capital out of it. But a lot of lenders overlent on bubble pricing, and they aren't also, they're not also going to be able to get back all their principal. So I think there's going to be losses and write-downs. You know, two-thirds of Canadian mortgages come up for renewal just in the next couple of years. And that's going to be a major issue if people feel like, and I've heard this articulated, I've seen people saying, well, we're not in a great rush because our mortgage doesn't renew until 2024 or 2025. But there's a lot of people thinking that way, right? So I think that the point is that the buyers are in retreat or absolute hibernation at this point. And this is in the States too, of course. Like, there was some data out, the latest data in terms of the propensity, or the University of Michigan Consumer Survey for November, in terms of spending intentions for consumers, found that there was the least appetite for buying a home since 1982, since the recession of 1982. And that was when the Fed funds rate at that point was like about 10%, so much higher than present, almost double the present 5.5%. But the issue is, of course, again, as I've said, 10 years of nearly zero rates made everyone overbuy housing to the point that prices went up, but also just the size of structures doubled. And, you know, people that used to live in 1,000 or 2,000 square feet ended up living in, you know, 3,000 or 4,000 square feet. And so it's just that much more expensive to maintain those properties now. So anyway, all that together, I think, you know, that anemic demand is going to continue, and it's going to continue pressuring prices lower. And there are clearing, you know, there will be a point where you can get a buyer to be interested or afford or be able to buy a house at a certain price, but the price point is a lot lower from where it is now. So I think we should expect to see that trend continue. As I've mentioned many times, I believe it's a 3-5 year cycle to clear housing excesses. It's not a 1 year cycle, and that the reason is because, you know, debts tend to be fixed, the mortgages tend to be fixed, and not always, you know, not automatically feel the impact of higher rates. But next we get to the unemployment you know, surge in the economy, and I think that's the part where we're going to get really nasty here.
We'll have more with Danielle Park right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Danielle Park. Danielle, if people can't afford a new home or a bigger home, are they going to be spending more money on home renovations?
Well, we saw a lot of that during the pandemic too, right? And if you listen to Home Depot and Target and Lowe's and all these companies, they've been recently reporting their third quarter earnings again, and they're seeing that there is some reno, you know, sort of smaller reno stuff going on, but ultimately they had a year-over-year decline in their revenue. And they're seeing, the aptitude of consumers to buy any big-ticket items is markedly reduced. That means like things like appliances. So, you know, will people sort of paint their place? You know, I'm sure there's going to be a good deal of that going on as regular, you know, as a constant maintenance issue. But in terms of taking on big extensions or, you know, redoing the entire kitchen and all that sort of thing, we're definitely seeing a decline in that type of activity. And, you know, it's spreading. Like, as you know, we're heading into the U.S. Thanksgiving next weekend, and then we have Christmas after that. We're really getting into the make or break part of the retail sales environment for all the retail companies that report, and they're all sort of warning that the consumer is not spending like they were by any stretch. Well, thank God, because they were spending themselves into oblivion and using a lot of government handouts, and now they're having to rely much more on their actual income because the excess of savings that was built up during the pandemic has been drawn down. So there's something like more than 50% of Canadians say that they're barely being able to cover their housing costs at this point. and they're reducing their spending on everything, from food. You know, another good aspect of this, there was an incredible amount of spending on automobiles during the pandemic. Again, zero rates, free money, you know, people thinking that they didn't want to take public transit and they needed to take individual automobiles. And we saw a big leap in the price of all kinds of automobiles, trucks and SUVs, but all kinds of cars. And, of course, they're all just, again, the same exact trend where people now have these massive payments and they're defaulting left, right, and center. Repo men are really busy again. The supply of inventory of unsold vehicles is mounting, not just on the new car lots, but on all the used car lots. And again, the propensity of people interested in buying a vehicle, the same Michigan survey of consumer households found that the amount of people thinking they're going to buy a vehicle is also at the lowest since the 1981 recession. So these are really secular shifts in behavior. And I think there's a whole bunch of people today that really were, reared during an era of insanely low money, cheap money, and developed very bad habits, very unsustainable habits, and ideologies about what they thought about things like, inflation. The belief in the last couple of years is that inflation was, only going to keep going up, while in fact the readings that we're getting are, down significantly from the peak last summer. And so you're just seeing pricing disinflation across the board. And a lot of that is coming from Asia, right? Because China in particular being a massive exporter of goods that we purchase, like 40% of the CPI basket is goods. And to the extent that those goods went up a lot during the pandemic where there was bottlenecks and excess demand for everything, now we're seeing the reversal of that, and you've got inventory of everything building all over the place, and in places like China, they're now flooding the world markets with a lot of cheap stuff, which then helps to bring down inflation, on our imports here. So that's disinflationary, so that helps to get the cost of living back down again. But again, it doesn't happen overnight. It takes time, ultimately, we have to pay down debt or clear off debt through defaults and bankruptcies, reorganizations. And the trustees in bankruptcy are reporting a very steady and healthy trend in people coming to them finally. Even homeowners who tended to do it last they tended to have some equity that they were trying to protect, and so they tend to be the ones who come later towards a restructuring. They're starting to be a very busy sector for the trustees in bankruptcy as well. So it's really just a good old-fashioned clearing event. Unfortunately, most people in Canada haven't seen one of these since, certainly the early 80s. There was a similar episode in the early 90s to a slightly lesser extent. I remember both of them, but in my professional career, this is the first time I've seen a equity bubble, a credit bubble, as well as a real estate bubble, all coming to a head at one time. And that can be a very debilitating combination for people that aren't prepared for it. For the people who can maintain liquidity and don't have debt in this environment, they're in a real sweet spot. And we're starting to see a dramatic improvement in terms of the investment yields which are on offer, that we haven't seen since 2007. So it's getting very enticing for those that can take advantage. But the caveat that I keep coming back to, and it's kind of like you got to keep a governor on that, is the reality is that you never get a bottom in the equity market until you've had this the U.S. Fed in particular leading the world, but goes back to easing. Why do they do that? They do that when the unemployment rate, which is their other aspect of their dual mandate, starts exploding. So far we've had a 0.5% increase in the U.S. unemployment rate. Traditionally, when that happens, we've had over that 0.7. When we have a 0.5% increase, that's when you typically are already in a recession, and we're starting to see, continuing claims are leaping. So I'm watching this data very carefully because I know that this is like another leg to come out from under things like the equity market, where, you know, a bunch of people are on these payroll deduction, direct contributions that go straight into financial markets, and in particular equity markets. So long as you have full employment, you've got a certain captive flow of passive money that just keeps going back into the equity market. When you start seeing a big spike in layoffs and unemployment, that is one of the things that starts to disrupt that flow and cause less buying capital to go into equities. And the same thing goes for the ability to maintain or function, service your debt. When you get the unemployment rate spiking, that's when you tend to see more defaults and delinquencies. Credit card delinquencies are already at recessionary levels. So it's this next leg of the stool, this unemployment piece, which is starting to really build. I mean, all kinds of sectors are laying people off again. And the average work week's been declining, you know, as people were just trying to cut the amount of hours they gave to try and avoid the layoffs. But I think the layoffs are coming because the earnings are under pressure here. You know, companies have had an abrupt increase in their cost of carry as well. At the time when revenues are falling for all the reasons that we're speaking, sales are coming down, and they are now, you know, having to figure out how to rationalize their expense side, which means typically less investment. So business investment being part of what drives GDP, household consumption spending being a huge part of what drives GDP. So as you can see, all of these things are largely in retreat, and all we've really got in sort of trying to fill the void, if you will, is government spending. And of course, in the U.S. in particular, government spending has been incredible in the last couple of years, like wartime spending during a time of supposed prosperity and expansion. So that was part of what created all the inflation. But now we've got, you know, the change of government prospectively coming up in 2024 in the next election, and you've got Biden, of course, having the worst approval ratings of anyone since Jimmy Carter. So I think there's a lot of dysfunction now, and I don't think there's going to be a lot of consensus in terms of more spending. And again, debt finance spending, right? Canada, America, all these countries, debt finance spending, which, as we've discussed before, you can inflate things in the short term with debt financed spending, but actually you're just making it a bigger hole down the road and slowing the economy more as you do. And that's been proven so many different ways and so many different studies. So it's hard to find something that's going to be a great accelerant for the economy. And that's why I go back to, I think lower prices are critical. If we can get prices down, even though that's very hard on the balance sheet, that will ultimately be very stimulative, because the investment options will be so much higher. Again, I think stocks will continue to fall here as we go into 2024 until we get central banks panicking about high inflation and, you know, perhaps a credit event. This kind of thing typically gets them off the sidelines and they start cutting. And you typically get a bottom in the investment markets sometime, you know, where they're almost at the end of their easing efforts. And that's when you get these really rich yields for people who are able to put new cash into the market. And that's really attractive. And then right now, of course, in between now and then, I expect that treasury bonds and government bonds are the things that they've been rallying again of late. That will continue likely to happen while everything else sells off.
Danielle, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Hey, thank you, Jim.
My guest has been Danielle Park, editor of the popular blog Juggling Dynamite and president of Venable Park Investment Council Incorporated. If you have any questions for Danielle or any of our guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com, our YouTube channel, Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.